Hey Bane, how's it going?
Hey, it's going good.
Thank you so much for joining us while Che is away. Che is very busy starting a new adventure in their life and hasn't had a lot of time to get that stuff done. So I'm super excited that we get to spend this time and chat and give her some time to get it all together.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I was super stoked. And it's Sunday, so it's gonna be a good day. We have a lot of stuff to do before work starts tomorrow. Are we doing anything fun today? You want to share with everybody what we're doing?
Yeah, so Sam is really good at dyeing hair and is Brad Mondo's number one
Oh my God,
fan.
stop it.
And watches so many videos, so super knowledgeable about this and has their own personal also coaching experience, which is not easy, I want to say. So today Sam is treating me and helping me bleach my hair and also dye my hair. So that's going to be an exciting little adventure today.
Oh my God, I'm so excited because I can do it on myself and it's fine, right? But I'm really excited to do it on someone else because I think it's going to be a lot smoother. It's going to be cleaner. It's going to be a lot more doable. So I'm so excited. Oh my God, I've been thinking about it for 3 days straight. So it's going to be so cool.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see you.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into it because we've got a really cool topic we're going to be chatting about today. So let's go ahead and get started. Action. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to We've Got It All Wrong. I'm Sam, and normally Chase here, but today we got Lore, and we're both still two queer millennials navigating through what is wrong with society and leaving you with ways to get to be your own catalyst for change. Get angry, cry, heal, and take action with us as we discuss today's unhumanistic culture. And today, we are going to be talking about religious trauma with Lore Clark. And I want to introduce you a little bit to Lore, who is my platonic life partner. So, and I know him a little bit. They go by they, them pronouns, and they are a College of Western Idaho and Boise State University alum, where they are a multinational Pi Kappa Delta speech and debate champion. When they were in college, they spent most of their time doing the speech and debate team, forensics, life. And then while focusing on their studies, they focused on gender studies and communication. Currently, they're a huge advocate for gender inclusivity and intersectionality, and they go and speak in certain spaces on their experience and spreading that knowledge and really able to foster some change in whatever environment they're in. And today, they are blessing us with their presence. Bless. A little teaser there. So we can talk about religious trauma. So, Lore, why don't you go ahead and start out for us? What are we talking about today?
I wanted to get into a topic very near and dear to my heart. Ha ha ha. Religious trauma. I feel like all of us can kind of relate to some type of religious trauma in our life. I mean, lucky if you're not, but at the same time, I feel like it's not an experience that everyone just goes through on their own. A lot of people have experience with either religion or the trauma from it. And so I feel like we could connect some of those dots today and just go through maybe our own experiences as well.
Oh, I love that.
As a queer millennial.
Queer millennials talking about religion. Yeah, no, I went through a religious journey in 2018, and I'm still, trying to really release that trauma that I felt. So I'm excited for us to talk about this today. So you and I talk about this all the time, but I'm excited to get a perspective from you in this setting and see where we can go from here.
Yeah, I got a couple different things that I wanted to make sure I touch on, and I'd also love to know your thoughts on them. But to start off, I feel like to get everyone else kind of in the same room as us, I want to just do some definitions to make sure that we all understand where we're starting off from. So first off, with religious trauma, it's also known as RTS, which is Religious Trauma Syndrome. It has a lot in common and a lot of similarities with CPTSD. For those of you who don't know the difference between PTSD and CPTSD, PTSD is usually caused from one singular event. We most commonly know it as people that come back from war or really long deployment and experience either a lot of violence or even sexual trauma. That could all lead to PTSD from one type of, you know, triggering event. CPTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder, is when it is caused by an ongoing traumatic event, which can last months or years. It's more complex because it's a lot harder to deal with, since you have a lot more stressors and triggers that can be triggered in multiple different ways, which can have multiple different outcomes. CPTSD can also come with more symptoms, such as having a hard time regulating your emotions. It's just difficult all around, right? And religious trauma has a lot of symptoms, and a lot of people that do have RTS also have CPTSD. And I think that's important to start off with before we get into what the harms are of religious trauma and what they can lead to. I know it's a little bit touchy here, but I think it's also important to define what a cult is. A system of religious veneration and devotion directed towards a particular figure or a belief. While we know that we're going to be focusing mostly on Christianity in this episode, since that's what I have my most experience with, I do think, you know, this is pertainable to many other religions as well. But although Christianity, I would say people go back and forth on whether or not it is a cult. Cult isn't necessarily defined as something horrific or ill-intended. The basic definition of a cult is a group of people with all the same belief systems.
Yeah, and I think that's such an interesting aspect. I remember I go back and forth a lot between, you know, what is the difference between a cult and a religious group, right? And when you like dig in, it's like, oh, well, there isn't too many differences, is there? But it's all about intention.
Yeah.
And because the whole point of, you know, religion is it's supposed to be good intentions. It's supposed to be pure intentions. And it's not necessarily saying that like all religion's bad, but the people who are the ones running religion and then the history of it, there's the intent that we had way back in the day no longer exists or may never have existed. So I think it's really an interesting and important area to really touch on both of these definitions, because there's similarities and that means something.
It does. And it's hard, because when I was researching this, it was hard for people to really be able to nail down the differences between religion as a whole, specifically focusing on Christianity, and a cult. You had people saying a lot of different things, but what it nailed down to was people saying a cult is very easily recognizable. You know it when you see it, like Scientology, for example, something like that. It would be a great example. The Children of God. We look at those and we're like, oh, that's a cult. But we look at things like Christianity and we're like, oh, no, that's a religion. I will say it started off definitely as a cult, as all religions do, before they become more wide stream. Like back then when Christianity was first introduced, the Romans definitely saw it as a cult. You know, before Christianity was the power, they were you know, looked down upon because it was not paganism, which was one of the main religions of the time. But now that they have become a more main religion and they have now become the power structure, we get the bad things that come in with the cult definition as well. And with that, I'd like to look into some of the things that I have personally, in my personal experience and research, have found problems with. And have contributed to my religious trauma. And I'd love to know your thoughts on these too. But the first thing that I really look at when it comes to what they try to control, especially Christianity, a lot of it does go down to control. They try to control everything about you, which goes back into the definition of a cult, wanting you to be there, controlling every aspect about you so you stay with them and your ideals don't change. And I think one of the biggest things is fear. You know, they always preach, you know, I remember being told as a kid, you should fear God. And it's a huge principle of Christianity. You should also fear authority. I remember my parents telling me that you should fear authority and you should fear your parents, which I thought was always very odd.
I remember that too. I remember the first time I heard fear God and I was like, oh man, I thought that was my guy. What am I doing being scared of him? And they're like, No, it's so you'll follow. And I'm like, I feel like I could follow in other ways besides being afraid, you know?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't it doesn't make any sense. You have this one person that's supposed to be rooting for you, that knows more about you than you know about yourself, who only cares about your best interests, but they want you to be terrified of them. Any therapist that I have listened to that has talked about religious trauma has gone on to connect these two things as, you know, manipulation and a recipe for future disasters in your relationships and who you connect with. Because they say that if you equate fear and love, that will lead to manipulation and unbalanced relationships in your life later on. If you fear who you love, do you not feel safe with them? If you fear them, you probably don't feel safe with them. And I feel like that fear is, again, they tell you to fear God because it leads into control. If you're afraid of him, you'll listen to what he has to say. You'll obey them. Again, I think obey is the main point here.
And there's something I want to ask. So what is the fear? Mm-hmm. So what are we supposed to be afraid of? We're supposed to be afraid of, or like, you know, fear God. Right. But what consequences mm-hmm. are we thinking of? Because, like, I know for me, it was everything I did, I was like, take it straight to hell. You know, I was you know, I did this, I'm going to hell. So that was like my main form of fear.
Yeah.
With that punishment.
You know, I'm sure that there's so many things for us to fear about God that no matter what you pulled away, whether it be fear of hell, fear of isolation, fear of loss of your support system and family, they have so many things to make you afraid of, not just God himself, that I think no matter what you decide to latch onto, especially as a child, then that is enough to keep you there, which I'm sure is the goal.
Love that connection. Great loop.
But scary all around, right? But the second is that I have kind of focused on here is trust. I remember a phrase that I was told often in Sunday school is lean not on your own understanding. And I never really thought about that in the church. So I was like, yes, I don't. Why do I need to think about my thoughts on the situation? I'm not all knowing like God is. He's the expert. Why would I trust my little feelings? You know, I'm just a person. God made me. He knows what's best. And, you know, with that, you're not supposed to trust yourself. And after not trusting yourself, I don't think it's something you ever learn to do, which can be dangerous, especially when you get older. And the church, they want control of every aspect, especially what you should feel, speak, do, go through God or church leadership for everything. And this, depending on the religion, can be taken even further. Like if we're talking about, what is the religion that Prince is?
Oh, no.
It's my most frustrating one. It's the one where they have the clock tower. Jehovah's Witness.
Ah, all right.
Okay.
And resume.
Jehovah's Witness. With that one specifically, and I know that Mormonism does a lot of these things too, but I think Jehovah's Witness is the worst, to my knowledge. Every single problem you have, whether it be a personal one, a social problem, a family problem, a legal problem, or even a problem that exists outside of the church in your family, like you got into a hit and run. So even things like that, they want you to go to the church for everything, every single thing, not the police, not your family, not your friends, not the law. They want you to go through them, which, you know, is very harmful, since they control what comes out of that. You can report it to them, they choose not to report it, or they just say, we'll take care of it. And a lot of that has to do with them controlling what gets out, information about their cult or religion, a lot of that being the sexual misconduct that happens in the church by the leadership. And we see this happen in multiple religions, not just Jehovah's Witness. Also, Catholicism has a huge problem with sexual deviancy in their church. But it all comes down to, at the end of the day, control. They control that. And they also have our trust and our fear that they can lean back on for why we'll come to them for it, we'll trust them for it, and we'll leave it in their hands. And I think that's dangerous, especially teaching a child that that is what the religion should be doing.
Yeah, because not only is it like within that realm of being within the religion. So I was like, say, you know, you're a child, you're going with your parents to church, but say when you're older, you leave. And then you talked about like the traumatic disorders that you can develop later on or like during. that takes a hot minute to work through, and will always have at least one little sticky piece that's always attached. So this is something that, especially in developmental years, is really impacting and shaping how you exist and build relationships with other people, which is exactly what they want. Because if you're having trouble building relationships with other people, who are you going to rely on more? The church. So it all feels so interconnected, and it's purposeful. It's supposed to feel that way. It's supposed to be that way, because that's how they keep their numbers, and it's how they keep their ideology and what they want the world to be continuing in motion.
Yeah. And I like your point on how it just keeps them there. It keeps them relying on the church for everything, because that's what they want. It's cyclical. They want all of the problems to be solved by the church. They want your support system to be from the church. They want anytime you need help, they want you to get help from the church, so you feel like you owe them. It all goes back in a circle back on the church. And with you also making that point about how it defines how they connect in the future as well to others, I think that's important when we talk about authority figures in our life later on, whether that be outside of the church or not. That could be other parents that you as a kid interact with. That could be school teachers, just elderly people on the street, you can't ever question the authority figures in your life, whether that be in the church or otherwise, because that's what they preach. To not question authority, and you must respect them unconditionally, which I think is very dangerous, especially when you're young, you're vulnerable. Teaching them just to, because they're older than you and hold some sense of authority, they deserve your respect, attention, and you should obey them.
Yeah,
like that's dangerous.
No,
this is also just to keep you pliable and unquestioning. And so you can just stay in their control and authority, which leads to how they want you to act as well. You're going to obey them and listen to them and be a good member.
Yeah. And we all know how I feel about authority. So when I remember being, because when I was growing up, my mom switched around through quite a few different religions. And, looking back, I kind of understand what her struggle was. She was looking for some community. She was looking for help. She was looking for people. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, she just kept getting kind of sucked into these situations and organizations that weren't having those true intentions for help, support, and community. Something that, I discovered was that I didn't like seeing, because I got quite a variety of different types of authority, and I wasn't digging what I was seeing. Mm-hmm. And I know growing up with authority, I was always very skeptical, because I was like, what is your true intention? Because I'm like, what's the behind the scenes? What are you actually wanting from me? And they're like, oh, it's actually this. And I'm like, no, there has to be another reason. So I left churches feeling like there was some ulterior motive. Like, I never felt like it was pure intent. Like, I never felt like it was this beautiful, pure experience. I always felt like there was an ulterior motive, that these figures of authority were trying to kind of like pull the wool over my eyes, or be like, oh no, it's just this. And even as a child, I was like, no, I don't like that. And back then, I didn't really know why I didn't like it. But as I'm older, I'm like, no, it's because the whole story isn't being shown to me. Mm-hmm. And I would love to talk about faith a little bit later, because you and I have talked about that quite a bit. Because I can't just have faith in something. Mm-hmm. Like I need more than that. But keep going. I'm loving that.
No, the burden of proof is definitely something.
Burden of proof.
And when we get older, if we start to get skeptical about these things, we start to feel like we're being sold something when we're at church. And it feels, I don't know if uncanny valley is the right word, but you just feel like you're the only person in this sea full of bobbleheads. And you're like, am I the only one with my ears open here? Or am I nuts right now? Like, you didn't drink the Kool-Aid, or you did. You feel like you got a different type of Kool-Aid. And so you're just watching all of this unfold, but it feels so ominous. But everyone else is crying tears of joy. And, maybe those people were missing something in their life that God filled. But when your cup is already full, it's very odd. And I don't know. And I also think when we look at what actual is the definition of religious trauma, I think that can help us also look into what can come out of religious trauma and where we're left as well. So when we look at the actual definition of religious trauma, it is of religious trauma syndrome. This is social obstacles, difficulty forming healthy relationships, sexual difficulty, loss of social networks, sense of isolation, and impeded social development.
Oh, and that all sounds very purposeful.
Which is, no, when we pin down every single one of those social obstacles, okay, so we don't know how to operate socially without God being present because all of those interactions were led by some greater power, some shared sense of identity, difficulty forming healthy relationships. I like the key word healthy here. Because all of the relationships that we built were centered around this other third person in the room that we had to constantly praise, admire, and adhere to their rules. Sexual difficulty. I mean, I'll talk on purity culture later. That's one of my next points here. But that definitely, with purity culture being such a huge pinnacle of Christianity and most faith-based religions, of course, we're going to have some type of fallout there. We're going to have some differences, especially when we're being taught as kids and before even our sexuality has even had a chance to take form. We deal with a lot of the fallout of that later. Loss of social network. You don't know if you're getting out of that religion, that's all of the people that you've ever connected with in your life. That is your friends, your family, your support system that you thought has always been there for you, but is now gone. So then you have a sense of isolation, like you're alone and feeling like this, which can impede your social development. It wrecks you in every sense of the form. So when you start to question Christianity and I probably any religion, and you feel lost and you can't pick yourself up or get help from other people, you fall back on the religion again to get that sense of normalcy back, which I feel like it's plays into the cyclical part of you're being trapped there.
Ah, absolutely. Because if you don't teach someone the way for them to take care of themselves on their own, mm-hmm. and only to rely on, like you said, a third party, and that third party is only in a certain area, you're going to constantly be getting people back, or those people are going to be going into other measures. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they may be thriving, but the statistics of that is so low, because in order to be able to work through religious trauma, it takes time. And a lot of the time it takes resources, and to be able to afford therapy and to be able to afford the time that it takes to work through all of that trauma. So it's, yeah, I think the cyclical word is a really good, really like all encompassing term for this, because it all leads back, because that's the goal is, mm-hmm. if you do leave, it's for you to come back at some point.
And I think that they know that they take advantage of people that are downtrodden and on their luck, or having financial issues, or, I mean, that's why there's so much missionary work. It's under the guise that they're helping these individuals, but it comes at a steep price that they don't ever talk about. They don't go to build these homes. And this is coming from someone whose brother goes on mission trips, okay, and is very high up in the church with his wife. They don't go to, you know, these developing countries that need food and housing to do things that are helpful for them. That's just a plus. But they purposely choose these groups of people that are, you know, that need help, because they're going to latch on to any help they can get. They're not in a place to be able to pick and choose, and they're aware of that, and they're taking advantage of that. Because, hey, if you're going to take my resources, no matter what that be, you know, whether that be health or, you know, food, creating housing, and no matter in what space that is, whether it's actually helpful or just, you know, under the guise of being helpful, they'll listen to you, and they feel like they have to, and you're their savior. Of course you have to be right. The information you're sharing is right. They're taking advantage of people who cannot think for themselves, do these things, that are in a disadvantaged situation, giving them Bibles more so than they're giving them what they need. And it's just, if you really wanted to preach what's good, just give them that stuff and leave. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand. It's very weird. It's like a sense of power over them that's just trying to be dressed up as goodwill.
Yeah.
It's gross.
And whenever you try to, like, bring these topics up to the people who do mission work, they get very sensitive over it. And I can understand, because you're dedicating, you know, your time in something that you truly believe in into this work. And to think that, you know, there might be some, I don't want to know if malicious is, like, I feel like that's like a harder word that I'm looking for, but some other intent, it's disheartening, especially for those who've been raised in the church. But when, just like what you said, like when I look at this, I'm like, if it was true you know, humanitarian work, you would do your business and then scoot you out. It wouldn't be, hey, why don't you come listen to my sermon now? Hey, oh, look, we also built a church for a religion that you had no idea existed until we came here.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and then if, God, if we go into the historical areas where, you know, back in time, where, you know, lands and villages were literally, you know, pillaged and taken over and completely wiped of their cultures, and instead brought Christianity in, you know, and it's, I can't look at people doing mission work in this day and age without thinking back on the historical context, because it hasn't been addressed in their communities, in their religious culture. So I just, I feel like I can, like we talked about earlier, I can see it. And I feel like a lot of the people who are doing the work don't, and that's intentional.
And it's interesting because, like, they just keep going for hundreds of years, and in thousands of years in some cases, they just keep going with the same thing. Teachers recheck their curriculums, you know, after a year, maybe a couple years, you recheck what you've been preaching to others to make sure that it is still correct. It is, you know, there is nothing that have changed, you know, nothing has changed. They just keep sending out the same thing. It's hard because they're preaching this to kids. They're starting them as kids. These kids that are missionaries are, in a sense, brainwashed or are brainwashing as well. And they don't know about it. And it's trapping them into it as well. And they think they're helping others, which adds a whole new level. And they've been doing this thing for so long, believing it's helpful without understanding the implications. You know,
And there's one more thing I want to touch in about this, because I remember when I heard about some people that I knew going to do missionary work, and they like made GoFundMes and things like that in order for them to go. I remember being so stunned, and I was like, okay, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, look at this overall and be like, okay, you know, every church can afford to send this group of people to a certain country with all these resources and complete all these plans. But when I was like thinking about some of the churches that these people that I was seeing, you know, making these GoFundMes, I'm like, yo, your church can afford it. Like, I've been to your church. I saw the 80-inch monitors float from the ceiling, giving me 10 different ways to tithe. All right. You had an app, all right, that your church made. I think you can, you know, shell out a grand to get someone to another country, instead of, and like, if this was really about like the opportunity to be able to give back, then you would give that opportunity to everyone who wants to do that, not just those who can afford to. I still can't fathom or make sense of that part.
And even I remember as a kid, where when I wanted to go to church camp, they were like, oh, it's $150. And my mom was like, we don't have that. And so I would go and talk to them and be like, I'm unable to. And they're like, maybe we can find you a sponsor. And it's like, if this is so needed for me and so good for me, I feel like you can shell out. And there are those churches like the ones in Texas where they have full on productions. I'm talking Beyonce level. I'm not shitting you when I say Beyonce level sermons.
Like Jason Derulo on TikTok level sermons.
We have people in like these LED suits and LED drums that are floating and being suspended from the ceiling, like five of them coming down to the stage on these lifts, and they have laser lights. Like it would put an EDM show to shame. And it is all coming, you know, these are tax-free, you know, institutions that are doing this. And it's just, I don't know. And I know that there's also such a sense of shame that's also projected in religion. And a lot of that has to do with the money and tithing as well. And I remember as a kid getting my allowance and feeling like, oh my gosh, if I don't tithe at least almost all of this, I'm not a good kid. I'm not a good Christian. And so I would turn around and have to tithe my money. And because I would want to buy, you know, bubble gum or whatever the hell I'm buying, I wouldn't tithe the full amount, which was, I don't know, 15% at that time, something like 12, something. I can't remember. But then you would feel guilt and shame as a child about not giving a tax-free institution your money when they're not even being transparent on their bulletins telling you how much each person makes too. There are so many churches that keep that close to the chest and don't want people to know.
Yeah, when they're spending their money on a laser light show instead of sending people to go on a mission. Like, I think there's something that needs to be looked at.
Like, oh my God, I'll never forget my last church. They're one of those churches that never had the transparency of how much people make that, you know, comes from your tithing. And they would just be constantly going on vacations, getting new cars, new houses. And people would be like, oh, they were gifted those. And I'm like, okay, well, why? First off. And second, are you sure?
Are you sure?
Are you
gifted?
Sure?
How? Did you give it to him? Because I didn't give it to him.
And this is just a breeding ground for corruption as well. Like the misabuse of power, which, you know, we're already seeing in a lot of Catholic and Mormon churches as well. Another thing I really wanted to get into was the purity aspect of it all, purity culture. Just the very basic idea is, again, about control when their worth is compared to how they will address and act around and towards men, what they wear, do, speak. It all leads up to your purity being tied to your very worth. It's also extremely misogynistic and sexist.
Boy.
They only focus on the women and what they can do for men. About, you know, sex, your kids, your marriage, all of it. And when you leave that religion and your worth isn't tied to your purity anymore, or if you lose your religion, and it leads you to, lose your virginity, it can lead you to question your own worth that you have and look to others to define what your worth is, which can lead to unhealthy relationships, behaviors, coping mechanisms. It's just, I think the purity aspect of it all is one of the biggest problems for me, since it's not just about control as a whole anymore. It's about controlling women specifically and what they can do for men. And I know in churches there have been times that I've heard where they have taken the men in one side of the room, the girls in the other, and said, you know, men, you do you want to marry a virgin? Raise your hand. And then they would look at the women and see, that's what you have to do. And it was all very, what can you do for them? I never have heard a purity talk dedicated towards men or aimed at them. It's just so odd to me.
No, it's so weird because it's just like, yeah, no, I want a virgin and like a virgin pussy. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, what about the virgin dicks? If we're going to be this like very like cis normative, heteronormative culture, then like, let's make it at least even. All right. Got nothing else going for you. Let's make sure everyone's got something pure going on. Or not at all. But no, it has to be women because women are this subservient in religious texts.
Cater to the men in every sense of the word throughout history, especially when it comes to like stables of power.
Mm.
It's always controlling the women first because the men lead it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to rely on. Something I'd like for people to take away from this is, yeah, I talk a lot about the problems with religion and what trauma can stem off it. But if anything, I really want y'all to understand that religious trauma syndrome is real. And you can literally derive CPTSD from your experiences of being forced to go to church as a kid. And I want people to take this away that you don't get to decide if you're a good parent. Your kid decides if you're a good parent. And you need to make sure that you are not forcing anything upon your kid, whether or not you believe it's good. And we're talking about religion here. I hate seeing so many kids being led along with their parents in their beliefs, and it can do harm to them. And you should be aware of that. Something to look at is Herman's categories of connecting the dots here, but Herman's categories of trauma. And when we look at the categories here that are under CPTSD and the ties it has with religious trauma, we see the main categories of CPTSD being captivity, psychological domination, and personality erosion. These are all things that we discussed are tied to religious trauma and what they lead to. We have authoritarian religious groups characterized by dogma, rules of sense of safety, security, and acceptance. And then when it comes to the domination aspect, we have a fear of hell. You talked about, you know, fire and brimstone, fear of abandonment, guilt over God, fear of displeasing him, family and community pressure, thought control, limiting information. And then when we look at personality erosion, we discuss loss of sense of self, of purpose, stable worldview, shattered assumptions, anxiety, fear, depression, and it also impacts our decision making. This is all encompassing and can really ruin somebody. And if you're a victim of religious trauma, you know, educate yourself, lean on someone, get yourself a support system outside of the church. If you're somebody that is very religious and is starting to think about, you know, maybe I should just look into these things just a little bit, find a support system outside the church just to talk to a therapist, talk to somebody, and make sure that you are taking care of yourself and looking out for yourself. We cannot rely on these institutions to do that for us.
Ooh, mic drop. Okay, that last sentence was like really good because it's true. You know, the places that are making these lives the way they are. I mean, I'm still shaking off things and I wasn't even 100% in the church growing up. These things affect us. So yeah. Reach out for those resources, especially if you're starting to think about it. And even if you're not, education's power.
Mm.
All right. Don't get education from just one system. You know, look into it. All right.
Education is elevation.
Ooh, ooh. All right, Laura, this was lit. real quick, something Che and I do every episode is we tell each other how much we appreciate each other because the time that I get to spend with people, I want it to be meaningful. And this was meaningful in very many, many ways. So I just want to let you know that I appreciate you and I appreciate your time and the excitement and energy that you put into being here with me today.
Oh, thank you so much, bud. I, of course, appreciate you letting me come on your show. Thanks, Che. I love being here. I know we have talks like this almost every night.
Every night.
And we always say, like, we should do this. So I'm glad we finally had the chance. And, you know, maybe other people can find some solace in our experiences as well.
Oh, absolutely.
And appreciate you.
Appreciate you. Oh, my God. All right. And not to segue to a completely different topic, but to segue to a completely different topic, we do have a promo swap with a very kind group of podcasters from PNW Haunts and Homicides. So we are going to be showing you their promo trailer, and it's going to be playing soon. We're going to link their information in the description of this episode. So take a listen to Caitlin and Cassie's trailer for PNW Haunts and Homicides and give them a listen to anywhere else that you can listen to podcasts. And until next time, we'll see ya.
Bye.
Hey, creepy people. This is PNW Haunts and Homicides. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Cassie.
Together, we explore stories of the paranormal and true crime throughout the Pacific Northwest. For each episode, we do a tarot reading to help us gain some insight on the topic as we share the facts of the case and our interpretations. You can find our episodes featuring true stories from infamous cases such as the misdeeds of Boeing, as well as lesser-known true crime cases like the murders in Tunnel 13.
As well as our spooky stories from Pike Place and Raven's Manor on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you'd like to listen. Have a creepy-ass day.
Thanks for joining us today on this episode of We've Got It All Wrong. Follow us on Instagram at We've Got It All Wrong and check out our link tree located in our bio for ways to connect and learn more. You can also sign up for our email list so we can keep in touch and send resources directly to you on ways to be your own catalyst for change. Take a screenshot of this episode and tag We've Got It All Wrong with your thoughts so we can hear what's up from you.
Whatever platform you're using to listen to us today, please follow, subscribe, and rate this episode so that we can build our community of societal rebels and spread the knowledge on how to take back control of how we show up in the world. And remember, practice makes progress. Doing your best is the best that you can do. And
fuck society standards.
Bye.